Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hello, Suburban Party Line.
Hey, Jim and Patrick, I'm so fucking pissed I didn't get my goddamn 2020 favorite album and song picks in. Do you fucking mind if I see if the band that made two of my favorite damn albums in 2020 would come onto the podcast instead?
Okay. Okay, Patrick, we're going to do a patron episode, actually two episodes, today and tomorrow is how this worked out. And I got to say, I don't know how exactly this came to pass, but it seems like the patrons are just doing a lot of work for us lately, even though, you know, this is supposed to be our gift to them to be on the show.
Yeah.
They bring so many gifts to us. And so, case in point, here on Rockin' the Suburbs, I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
Today with us is friend and listener Mike Snyder. Hello, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Hi, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Good. And, you know, instead of just coming on and saying, like, hey, I want to talk about Topic X, which he's totally allowed to do, and we've had great conversations like that before, he was like, why don't I invite a couple other guys on, and we can talk to them?
Yeah.
And so we said, I guess so. So that sounds pretty cool. Who you got in mind, Mike? And so, Mike, who did you invite to be on the episode today?
Well, I think you guys know I didn't get any year-end list in, like, my favorite album or my favorite song, because I just got busy covering the insurrection, the inaugural, and all the other fun things that 2020 has given us toward the 2021. But two albums I loved this year that were in my tops that I would have were by the Drive-By Truckers. And I've interviewed them in the past for the Mothership, who I work for. And I thought, hey, you know, why don't we ask them and see if any of them would want to come on and talk? And I know, like, other members, like Mark Neese, has mentioned whether we could get them on. And several people have mentioned their music throughout the year. So Patterson Hood and Mike Cooley agreed to come on the podcast with us.
Amazing.
It was great. So we recorded this interview recently. The three of us were on there, and we talked with Patterson and Mike, and it was a great conversation. As you mentioned, they have two albums out in 2020.
The Unraveling was the first one that came out in January.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I forget if it was November or December was the New OK.
The New OK, yeah, there you go. And so, so that was a lot of the conversation was those two recent albums, but we talked about other things as well. You know, they're not shy about expressing their opinions, I would say. All right. Okay. This is going to be two parts. We're going to do part one of the interview today and then part two tomorrow. All right. A real quick disclaimer on this episode. This one gets an E, explicit rating. You'll hear why. All right. So ready to roll tape?
Let's do it.
Here we go. Patterson Hood, Mike Cooley, thank you very much for joining us here for an interview on the Rockin' the Suburbs podcast. We so appreciate it. This is the part where you say hello. Thanks for having us.
Hey, what's happening?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
I'll warm up. That's okay.
I'm a little sick of the goddamn suburbs, to tell you the truth.
That's fair. That's fair.
Or at least my neck of them.
Yep. So Mike Snyder here, we have him to thank for inviting you to be on the show, so we're going to let him ask the first question.
You guys, it's great to see you, and thanks for joining us on the podcast. 2020 was a year of challenges for all of us, but at least on the good side of the ledger, you gave us fans of your music two great albums. Each of them's been on end of the year top album lists, and both have been mentioned here on the podcast in the months previous and in recent days also. Much of the music was recorded in Memphis that you guys put out on those two albums, and some was recorded after the COVID-19 lockdown. Could you talk a bit about the differences in the collaboration and the creative process that was involved in the two albums?
We were a little bit miserable in Memphis, and we were a shitload miserable after lockdown.
Yeah. Actually, I had fun in Memphis, but that was a fun week. Yeah, we got you a birthday cake, asshole. What are you talking about?
I had a good time.
Bringing us tequila and weed and birthday cake.
We had a wonderful time, but there was a little bit to be unhappy about, you know.
Well, it was Memphis. I mean, it was Memphis.
Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, we had Mick Jagger. We were hanging out with Mick Jagger.
Yeah, we were.
Wait, what?
That don't happen in 2020. That didn't happen in 2020.
No, he heard drive-by truckers were there, so he showed up. But no, man, COVID locked everything down, so now Mick Jagger can't come see me whenever he wants.
There was a picture on Instagram of the band with Mick at the Sun, at not Sun Studios, but Sam Phillips's recording studios, right? How'd that happen? Right.
Peter Guralnick wrote the book about Sam Phillips, which is a real, real good book. Mm-hmm. And Mick and Leo DiCaprio bought the film rights to it. And so they were wanting to make a film about it. Hopefully they will yet, with Leo playing Sam, which actually is kind of cool. I'm okay with that. And because so far, no one's gotten it right. That's played him in a movie. The Sam Phillips character is never anything like Sam Phillips. So maybe he'll get it right. But so they were in town, or Mick was in town with the director, screenwriter, and production designer, and a bunch of bodyguards, scouting locations, basically. And they hung out all afternoon at Sun Studios with Jerry Lee Lewis. And then they came over to our studio without Jerry Lee to the other one, to where we were. And we knew Peter was coming over. We met him before. And so I was looking forward to seeing him because I'm a big fan of his books. But we didn't know he was going to have Mick Jagger with him. So that was kind of crazy.
That's crazy, man. We just talked to Peter. What was it, Jim? Like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Damn, I wish we had that info. We could have really had some inside info on Peter. He's such a nice man.
He's so great.
He is. I haven't read the new book yet, but I'm a big fan.
It's so good. It's really good, man.
I was out in the lobby of the studio and literally this motorcade. It was literally a motorcade. There were SUVs, there were sedans, there were this, that, and the other. They were all black, and they were all obviously together. Hmm. And zoom, 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 zoom. And from the from the vantage point of the studio lobby, there's like a corner. You know, you can't see past this corner, and that's where they all park. And I think, oh well, somebody's coming by. You know, this is a legendary place. Mm-hmm. They don't do tours, but whatever. Yes, somebody's coming in. And so I go back into the control room. So I'll lay low for a little while so whoever this is can do their thing. And he comes in and says, "Hey man, Mick Jagger's in the hallway."
What do you say to Mick Jagger when you just bump into him?
I didn't say shit.
I had an in. I had an opening because they made that movie about Muscle Shoals. You know, my dad was part of all that. And so when there was a moment to kind of actually say something, I thanked him for being in the movie because that happened. Mm. Having Mick and Keith appear in that movie gave it so much more credibility and made it a much bigger deal. And it meant the world to my dad. It meant the world to all those guys. So I just interjected that, and he was just as nice as he could be. Like, you know, like a
he was cool,
like
yeah,
fine English gentleman. You know, like just like that.
Well, you know, he knows something about like old blues records and stuff like that. You could always have that conversation. Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, he was. I mean, he was all about the studio, and he was talking to. He was talking to Sam's son that was in there, and you know, he was he was there a long time. They were there well over an hour. And,
That's cool, man.
It was really cool, and you know, we just kind of stopped doing whatever, just kind of hung out and kind of stayed out of the way. But as they were about to leave, you know, we hit him up for a little photo op, and he was very nice about it, and it was super cool. It was real nice.
That is cool. And I'll tell you, Patterson, Jim and I, back when we worked at the Nation's newspaper with Mike, and Mike was on this road trip. We somehow talked him into funding this road trip where we drove an Airstream trailer from Northern Virginia down to Austin for South by Southwest. I think just because we wanted to see some shows and do stuff. But Bob Mayer, who worked at the Memphis Commercial Appeal, I believe, and still does, and wrote The Replacements book, which is excellent, he got us in there. And
the Sam Phillips recording studio, yeah.
Yeah, the second place, yeah. And we went up, was one of Sam's sons. Right. I guess it was Jerry, right?
Yeah, Jerry. Yeah.
He took us up to the office, and he's like, oh, here's some old – you know, showing us Sam's desk. He's like, here's some Johnny Cash flats. You guys want these? And we're like, okay, I guess. It was crazy. I almost passed out. Literally, I was so lightheaded. I thought I was going to fall down the stairs. It's crazy. Yeah. But, and then they have a little mastering area there too, which, I mean, it was that place is mind blowing. Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah.
Now, Mike, you said you weren't having a great time there. Was it, you know, the topics on The Unraveling, which was the album that came out?
Not the studio thing. Yeah. That was all cool. But, I'll tell you what was going on was Brett Kavanaugh was about to be confirmed.
Mm. Oh, yeah. So Jesus.
I mean, this was all happening with this backdrop. So, yeah, okay. We were there and we had a much more marvelous distraction than most of the country did. And we can no longer go, you know, hide out in a studio in Memphis and record silly songs and laugh at each other with Mick Jagger.
Which we did a lot of.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, things kind of, the news was kind of bad, but we were in the studio hanging out with Mick Jagger for about a minute. But now I'm fucking home every fucking day with every fucking body.
You know, I'm so interested by that, because here's a question I wanted to ask you guys. You know, like, I'm always, you know, as a music fan in the abstract, like every band I learn about them from a certain way, just like we all do, right? And you get a first impression of them. But I wonder, when you guys started writing more political songs and started being, quote unquote, you know, to the average rock and roll fan, a little more serious and a little more connected to current events, do you think that somehow made it harder for you guys to write just like rock and roll songs, you know, just like laid back silly songs, or you know, how does that affect your mindset as a great American rock and roll band?
I mean, during the fucking 4 years that we just went through, it was hard for me to write anything that didn't deal with that, because that was taking up so much real estate in my brain. Mm-hmm. Because every day, every 10 minutes, there was some new bullshit being added on to the bullshit from 10 minutes ago.
Right.
And it was, you know, some of it affects, you know, it affects people I love personally, you know, including my family. There was a lot of, you know, it got really personal to me. And,
oh yeah, same here.
Yeah.
Force of nature and the force of will. Bring your spirit when it gets revealed that you serve for an injury.
You know, I generally write about either what's pissing me off or what's making me sad or something that's making some major tumult in my brain. Usually not the good stuff, because the good stuff, I'm too busy having fun with the good stuff.
Right.
I sit down and write about it, you know. Yeah. And so,
no, you don't write about that.
Way too many darker songs, you know. That's why I respect people like, you know, Malcolm and Angus Young that can just write those like fucking fun songs and have them be so great. You know, it's like You know, my happy songs aren't generally that good, but one or two maybe are okay. But so that was a pretty big good part of that. But I mean, to me, we've always been a political band. I feel like my songwriting has always been, there's always been a political aspect to mine and Cooley's writing, you know. But somewhere around 2015, when the whole Black Lives Matter thing kind of started blowing up, and Trayvon Martin, which that whole story just really hit a nerve with me, and all the stuff in Ferguson and all of that. That was kind of the beginning of writing a more, addressing it more directly instead of, you know, instead of through the lens of some other time frame, because we did a lot of that. There was a lot of, you know, songs that were took place in our grandparents' generation that I just kind of figured people would connect the dots between, you know, Roosevelt, which we're now dismantling, you know,
right.
But evidently they didn't as much as I thought they were until, you know, later.
Well, yeah.
To follow up on that, to me, one of the most interesting things about art, especially art that takes a certain amount of time, is that by the time you're done with it, does it still hold up, or does it still fit what people are feeling, or what have you? And when you released American Band in 2016, it felt so real the next year. You know, it felt so real
more so than when it came out, right, I believe.
2017. And it's like, were you feeling that there was some storm brewing, or was it just a matter of coincidence?
Well, you gotta, we were dealing with what came before the storm we're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, we were dealing with how the backlash to a Black president.
Yeah.
Was that, that's what that record was as far as anything that was immediate, that's what was it. But, you know, we were still pulling things from the past to try to make that make sense, mm-hmm. or to try to put it into context historically. And, you know, from here on out, we're going to be doing the same thing, you know. You're trying to get in what's right now, but you can't get in what's right now without pulling something from over here to make it make sense.
Do you guys think of your music as protest music?
Sure.
Yeah.
I just ask that because it seems like when people don't really use that term so much anymore, it's associated with, you know, the 60s or Neil Young or whatever, you know, Ohio, right, and songs like that, right? But you think of yourselves in sort of carrying on that tradition?
Not necessarily because we want to, but because, at least speaking for me, I mean, I would rather not have to write those songs. I'd rather not have to be thinking about that, but I'm not going to bury my head in the sand and not, I mean, I keep up with current events. I keep up with politics. I always have. I was that weird kid that came home from third grade and watched the fucking Watergate hearings. I mean, I did, you know, and
I was the one that came home pissed off because Gilligan's Island won.
That was me too, but
that sums your band up right there. Completely.
It kind of does. You know, so it's always been kind of part of the thing, but I would much rather not be having to write those songs. I'd much rather be writing about something else at this point. You know, I'm so over it all.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of the work we did, and I'd like to think the songs hold up and will be okay to listen to, you know, someday when we live in a better world. I don't know. Or maybe they can be like, you know, this was the music that was inspired by how screwed up things used to be. You know, I would love that. I'm fine with these songs being dated or even outdated at some point. I think I've got plenty of songs that aren't that kind of, that aren't that way. So I'm okay if that's part of the process. We have a lot of records, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's kind of what was really interesting to me. And I want to ask this before Jim and Mike mute me and don't let me ask any questions or talk anymore. But how, you know, because like you guys, people were have been doing just what you said, Patterson, paying attention, and they write what's in their head. And so there's a lot of music that has been coming out, you know, over the past 2 years, especially, right? It's been like a flood of stuff. And this year, everybody's making their solo cover pandemic album too. But how has listening to music or what, I guess, even on a more basic level, what have you guys been listening to that's been coming out that's pretty new and people that are reacting in the same way? And how does that, you know, what are you listening to? And did it influence you guys, in the art you were creating?
I mean, when we put out American Band, I figured the floodgates were going to open and it was going to be like 1970, you know, and it was going to be like all these people writing about this thing going on. And then there was like crickets. It was like there was nobody else really doing it, at least other than in the hip hop community.
Right.
And then it started happening even in the pop music community, thanks to, you know, Beyonce and records like that coming out. But the so-called what's left of rock and roll, you know, and it was still kind of crickets, you know. Mm-hmm. Father John Misty made a pretty cool record about it. I thought Pure Comedy kind of hit a certain aspect of that really well, but there wasn't a lot of that coming out, and I was kind of shocked by that and a little saddened by it, because it's like, man, it's like, is everybody paying attention? This shit is really fucked up, you know? They're putting babies in cages, for Christ's sake. And so I don't know. As far as the other part of the question, I mean, you know, I bought less records last year because I've been broke. I've been unemployed for a year. I wasn't allowed to go hang out and make my weekly run to the record store, but I'd still find an excuse to still get a few. I still bought some records, and probably more than I could afford. And that's, you know, part of what's kept me as slightly sane as I've been able to stay. And because I do listen to a lot of music.
And do you find too, just to follow up again before Jim and Mike shut me off, that that music that takes the, you know, maybe entirely different approach, that takes like, hey, here's a meditative approach, and, you know, here's us getting back to your center. Do you find that attractive, or do you feel like everybody should be sitting up and waking up and answering the call?
I like anything that's just good. I mean, I don't really give a shit what it's about or what they're doing. You know, if there's something about it that's compelling to me, either musically or lyrically, preferably both, you know, then I'm kind of all in, and I like all kinds of styles. I like everything, you know. I mean, probably 90% of everything I've bought has been dominantly female oriented for probably the last 5 or 6 years, you know, just because for years and years and years, it was all dudes making so much of the music other than a few genres that women were able to get a record deal performing within, you know. I mean, outside of that, you know, there weren't women making those, getting a record deal to make those kind of records, you know. And so since those floodgates have opened, it's like, you know, that's been most of what I've bought.
How about you, Mike? What have you been listening to?
I've been seething with anger.
Mm-hmm. Is there any music that helps that?
No, but there's none that hurts it.
Well, that's well put, yeah.
Well, have either of you thought about writing about the protest and, you know, the January 6th thing and the...
I probably will in about 17 years.
Interesting.
It's been really frustrating because it's like, man, I want to just do this right now. And then I realize, when did you ever? Mm. You always dealt with these things a little bit down the line, a little bit older, a little bit smarter, except... a little bit older, a little bit smarter is starting to converge with dead. So, you know.
So it's almost too fresh.
So
then,
I would love to spend a little more time on the road before, you know, those two roads converge.
I don't plan on writing about it. You know, I don't ever set out to write any of this shit, but I'm I'm making a pretty conscious effort at not writing that one at this point, you know. And
I mean, what am I going to tell these people? You know, am I going to tell these people? Yes, yeah, some asshole, whether he was consciously thinking about it or not, tried to take down the country's flag and replace it with a symbol of one man. And no, and we're still trying to understand about, what about this is war do you not get yet?
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I mean, war is pretty much a game of capture the flag. Mm-hmm. And consciously or not, that's what happened. And the whole, that's taken the entire concept of country and abandoning it in service to fealty of one man.
Right.
From the comfort zone of history, on the lips of trusted loved ones, to the wounded, fragile minds of angry youth. No sooner was it over than the memory made it nobler, a selective means by which to point the view.
Okay, I think that's a good place to end today's episode or today's portion of the interview right there. Yep. Thanks very much to Mike Cooley and Patterson Hood. We so appreciate the time you spent with us. And listeners, tomorrow you're going to get more, just more of just this more. Interview. All right?
Yeah. It's going to be great. And man, how cool are those guys? They're just like the coolest guys on the planet. It was really amazing to talk to them. So thanks again, Mike. That was such a treat. I hope all of our listeners really enjoyed it.
It certainly was fun. I mean, I think I got the feeling they were looking for someone to talk to, too. So yeah. I got to blow off some steam, I think.
They found the right guy over here.
All right. So you're not going to want to miss tomorrow's episode, part two of our interview with Drive-By Truckers, Patterson Hood, and Mike Cooley. And let's just move on to that. So it's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And I'm Mike Snyder.
All right. We'll talk to you all tomorrow.
I've never downloaded Twitter's app.
Hmm.
I consider that a monumental accomplishment. It doesn't make me better than you, but it might.